Hey, how are you? This is Doug. I'm the senior pastor at Live Oak. Thanks for joining us in this online experience. It's a little different today in terms of our normal format. We have an empty auditorium, but there's a lot of things different today. There's a lot of things different in this season of life, but here's one of the things I know that's not different. It seems like every part of our life seems very different right now, but here's what's not different. I believe every day of your life, God is working in you with purpose, and he's trying to build a bigger faith. Faith is your greatest asset you have in life, and I believe that God is trying to build a big faith in you. That's true of in this season of life with an unknown things going on in our life, but it's true every day. God is a God of purpose, and he's working in you with purpose. Here's one of the things we've been talking a lot about is this verse in Romans 8:28. It's a verse to hold on to in times like this, but also in any time, that we know that in all things, including during health concerns, during financial concerns, during relational concerns, during spiritual concerns, during any kind of concern, in all things, God works for the good of those who love him, who've been called according to his purpose. God is a God of purpose. And there's purpose in this season of life for you. That's always true, though. One of the things that we really believe that we've been talking a lot about lately is this, that you were created on purpose, for purpose, and God is always working in you with purpose. You were created on purpose. You're not an accident. You're on God's radar. You were created for purpose. God has plans for you to contribute something to the world. And God is always working in you with purpose. That every day, I believe God's working in you. And like I said, I think he's trying to build a bigger faith in you. Because faith is your greatest asset. Faith is greater than fear. Faith helps you navigate. And we're in uncertain times where there's really not a map for navigating a lot of what we're doing. So we better know what our compass is. And our compass is our faith in a big God who promises to give wisdom, who promises to provide, who promises to guide and navigate. Well, this whole statement about you were created on purpose, for purpose, and God's always working in you with purpose, we see it played out in the interaction between Jesus and another guy in Luke chapter 19. And one day Jesus is traveling through a town, and this is how it goes. I'll read it. Jesus entered Jericho and was passing through. A man was there by the name of Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and was wealthy. So Israel was occupied at that time by the Roman government. The way they paid for their wars and paid for their empire was through taxation. And they would go into a conquered land and recruit some people to be where they could get rich by taxing their own conquered people. Zacchaeus was recruited to do that, so he was taxing his Jewish countrymen. And sold out to the Roman Empire, and he was getting rich off of it. He wasn't really well liked. Verse 3, he wanted to see who Jesus was, but because he was short, he could not see over the crowd. So he ran ahead and climbed a fig tree to see him, since Jesus was coming that way. So Zacchaeus wanted to see Jesus, but why? Jesus had created a buzz. He was drawing a crowd. People knew there was something different about him, and they wanted to understand it. They wanted to see this man who was creating such a buzz. Zacchaeus wanted to see it too, but he was short. I can relate to Zacchaeus because there were three things I wanted to be growing up. A cartoonist, I couldn't draw. A musician, I couldn't really read music and do music theory that well. And I wanted to be tall. I'm 5'5". I've been that way since the eighth grade. Here's what I know about being vertically challenged. Me and Zacchaeus have that in common. You tend to plan ahead. If you're going to a parade, you get there a little early, or you find the strategic seat. Zacchaeus has to be strategic because of an obstacle to see Jesus. And he really wanted to see Jesus that day. But what we find out is Jesus really wanted to see him too. It says this in verse 5. When Jesus reached the spot where Zacchaeus was, he looked up and said to him, "Zacchaeus, come down immediately. I must stay at your house today." So he came down at once, and he welcomed him gladly. I bet Zacchaeus hadn't been welcomed and invited to spend time with somebody in quite some time. He was not the guy that would be the guest of honor anywhere. To let alone have the guest of honor, the guy that's drawing a crowd, want to spend time with him. And that whole intentional step by Zacchaeus to get Jesus' attention paid off. In fact, here's what I think that's a transferable principle for us, is a small step toward seeking Jesus makes a big difference. Physically, Zacchaeus had to climb a tree and get ahead where he could see Jesus. For you, it might look different. It might be just saying a prayer. God, I want to know you exist. Or, Jesus, I want to know you more. And it might start with a prayer. It might start with reading the Bible and trying to understand who God is and what he wants to communicate. It might be looking for where God's working around you. I don't know what it is, but probably there's always a small step that you could take towards seeking Jesus with all your heart. And a small step towards seeking Jesus makes a big difference. In Jeremiah 29:11, he tells us, God's speaking to us, saying, "For I know the plans I have for you, plans to prosper you, not to harm you, plans to give you hope and a future." And just a little bit later, verse 13, he says, "Seek me with all your heart." He doesn't say, "Seek my plans with all your heart." He says, "Seek me." We said this several weeks ago in this series we've been doing called Living on Purpose. Don't just seek God's guidance. Seek God. Don't just seek God's provision. Seek God. Don't just seek God's wisdom. Seek God. Because the thing is, if you seek Jesus with all your heart, all that other stuff goes with us. But sometimes we'll just settle, "God, would you get me out of this jam? Would you help me figure out what to do next?" And I promise you, if you will seek God with all your heart, he will lead you well. And he'll provide you everything you need for life and for godliness. Some other people are watching this interaction between Jesus and Zacchaeus. And I imagine when Jesus stopped at the tree and looked up at Zacchaeus, they thought, "Oh, this is going to get good. He's going to tell him off for selling out his countrymen. He's going to tell him off for making all this money in a kind of a corrupt way." They weren't expecting Jesus to say, "I want to spend time with you. I want to be the guest in your home." They were shocked. And it says they started to mutter. It says this, verse 7. When the people saw this, they began to mutter. Has anything ever been good said when someone mutters? "He has gone to be the guest of a sinner." Well, they were right. That's who Zacchaeus was. I mean, it's true of all of us. But Zacchaeus was really good at being a sinner. And Jesus wanted to be his guest, and they didn't understand it. And for some of us, we really take what other people say as gospel. We let other people speak into our lives, and it becomes our identity. It becomes our currency because we value how we see ourselves based on how others see us. Zacchaeus and Jesus are not focused on the crowd at all. Zacchaeus does something very, very good. He focuses on his interaction with Jesus. He doesn't fall back into his identity. He goes, "Yeah, they're right, I am a sinner. How dare Jesus want to come to my house? He shouldn't do that." No, he stays focused on this interaction with Jesus, and Jesus stays focused on this interaction with him. Here's what it says in verse 8. But Zacchaeus, not paying attention to the crowd, stood up and said to the Lord, "Look, Lord, here and now I give half of my possessions to the poor. And if I have cheated anybody out of anything, I will pay back four times that amount." He actually goes above and beyond what would be normal and what would be normally required for making it right financially. He goes above and beyond. He changes. And there's no indication that Jesus said, "Hey, Zacchaeus, really, you need to pay some people back." We just see that Jesus and Zacchaeus have this interaction that is so meaningful that Zacchaeus becomes a different person. He moves from being a taker to a giver. He's changed. You know, in one chapter earlier in Luke 18, Jesus has an interaction with another person that was a wealthy person. He's typically called the rich young ruler, a young person who was very, very good. Unlike Zacchaeus, rich young ruler is very, very good. He tried to do everything that the law required. Was really, really good. But he's also really, really wealthy. And Jesus said, "Hey, if you really love me, sell all you have and follow me." Because Jesus knew that in his heart, money was number one. But he was a pretty good guy. Here, Zacchaeus is kind of the opposite. He's a really bad guy, but really wealthy. But when Jesus didn't even challenge him to do it, Zacchaeus, when he has an interaction with Jesus and understands who he is, he lets go of everything that had priority in his life and says, "Jesus is number one." And he's changed from the inside out. And here's one of the things we learned from Zacchaeus that's going to be true of you as well. Zacchaeus demonstrates that inward change shows up with an outward action. If Jesus changes you on the inside, it's going to show up on the outside. And just changing yourself on the outside without changing the inside of who's number one in your life, without making Jesus priority in your life, outward change, it's just kind of the rich young ruler. You're still in charge, and something else is still priority. But Zacchaeus, he said, no, God's in charge. And he made that decision on the inside, and it changed him from the inside out. He experienced a change in direction. He started living differently. He became a giver instead of a taker. He had a change in leadership. He put Jesus in charge of his life, from what we can tell. And it changed his life. And suddenly, this is what happens for all of us when we follow Jesus. Our life is not about serving ourselves. It becomes about serving others. And we live in a time where that's very, very valuable. That right now, how God wants to be at work in the world is through people like you and me. A change of leadership means we start serving others. And Jesus identifies what happened on the inside. He says this in verse 9. Jesus said to him, to Zacchaeus, today salvation has come to this house because this man, Zacchaeus, too, is the son of Abraham. Meaning, you're in the faith. You're in the family of faith. Welcome to the family, Zacchaeus. And anybody who's listening to this thinks, do you know what he's done? Jesus says, yeah, but do you know who I am? And do you know how what forgiveness can bring? What redemption can look like? What change from the inside out, can how that can happen? He says, today it's happened. And Jesus said, and this is my purpose. This is why I'm here. For the Son of Man, Jesus, came to seek and save the lost. Jesus came for people like Zacchaeus. He came for people like me. He came for people like you. Jesus came to seek and save the lost, because the truth of all of us is we all need what only Jesus can bring. Have you ever lost something valuable, significant? Have you ever kind of done the thing where you're checking your wallet, keys, and phone, and all of a sudden something's missing? Every time I leave the house, it's like, do I have my glasses? Do I have my keys? Do I have my wallet? Do I have my phone? Have you ever lost something valuable? I remember walking through the neighborhood one day and seeing a poster of somebody who had lost a pet. And we're pet people. We have three dogs at our house. I've never had an experience in my life where I can remember not having dogs around, except maybe during college a little bit. But if you've ever had a pet go missing and you're a pet person, you know that feeling of panic. And the thing is, if you lose something, the level of how much it matters to you kind of mirrors the intensity of your search. A pet goes missing. We care for her pet. We'll do whatever it takes to find our pet. I remember one time I was traveling, and I was in Chicago, and I was about to go through security, and so I'd kind of gotten used to traveling. I was traveling a lot in those days, and so I took my wallet except my ID, my phone, and everything I had, keys, and I put it in my briefcase, and I got my briefcase and my suitcase and got out of the cab, anticipating going through security, got out of the cab, started to walk up to security, did the thing to make sure I got wallet, keys, phone, all that stuff, and I recognized, oh yeah, I put it in my briefcase. Hey, where's my briefcase? And I'd left my briefcase in the cab. I had my suitcase, I had my ID, but my cell phone and my wallet and my briefcase were now in a cab at Chicago O'Hare Airport that I assumed that guy wasn't sitting around waiting an extra couple of minutes to make sure I didn't forget anything. So I walk out, and there's just cabs everywhere. And I'm looking, and I'm thinking, where's the cab I was in? And there's just dozens and dozens of them. So I'm like, okay, what do I do? Well, luckily I had a receipt from the cab company. And so I call the number on the thing using a borrowed cell phone through a kindness of a stranger. And I call them, and I say, hey, I left my briefcase in a cab. And it's this company. He says, okay, well, we have three different colored cabs. What color was, oh, what? No, he said, what was your cab driver's name? I don't remember. I couldn't describe him to you. except he was a friendly conversation. What color is the cab? We have three color cabs. Was it yellow, white, or blue? I don't know. I couldn't remember anything except exactly where I had left my wallet and phone, which was in the briefcase, which was in the cab. So he puts out a call on the radio and goes to all these different cabs they have driving around. And the guy unfortunately gets it, comes back, and brings it back. But I felt so panicked and urgently, I was going to do anything I could to find my wallet and cell phone. Because whatever the level of intensity of what's missing, what it means to you, mirrors the intensity of your search. We adopted our son and daughter, Jean and Gracia, 7 years ago. And we'd only had them home for about a week. And one night, they were sleeping in their room, and we went in to check on them. And we went in to check. Gracia was sleeping in her bed and went over to Jean's bed. And he's missing. I was like, where could he be? I mean, is he hiding? Did he wander out the front door? So we go to the front door, it's locked. Go to the back door, it's locked. So no, he's got to be somewhere in the house. We searched everything. We thought, did he go out a window? He's only 4 years old, so we're thinking, it's not a lot of places to go. But we're searching and searching and searching. My thought is, wow, we adopted these kids 1 week ago, and I've already lost one. Like, what do we do? And so we searched everything twice, three times. We're panicked. Finally, we go to his bed again, and we look under it, and somehow he had slipped off the mattress between the bed and the wall and was down behind the bed where you look under the bed, you couldn't see him, but he was kind of just down, just kind of wedged in there. But suddenly when our newly adopted son is missing, we were doing everything to find him because the level of the value of whatever it is that's lost to you, whatever that is, matches the intensity of your search. So when Jesus says, I came to seek and save the lost, how much must you mean to him that he would turn over heaven and earth, leave heaven to come to earth, live in a human body, die on a cross? How much must you mean to him that his level of intensity of search includes all that Jesus did to seek and save you and Zacchaeus and me? You know, I was trying to think about what really it means that Jesus would leave heaven to come to earth, born in a manger, dying on a cross. What does that mean? And I was thinking about it, and then actually the adoption process with our kids gave me some great clarity about that. Our kids are from the Democratic Republic of Congo in Africa. The Congo is kind of in the middle of the country. It's the middle of Africa, excuse me. And they were from a city called Kinshasa, which is on the far west side of the Democratic Republic of Congo. And we had to go there to meet our kids initially and then do some stuff with immigration. And then we came back and then we were going back to meet them again. So we were preparing for this trip to go meet our kids. And they were at the Democratic Republic of Congo in Kinshasa at this orphanage called Center Boboto. And we're on this conference call to prep us and brief us for what it would look like to go to the Congo in Africa because it's a challenging country. And as they're on the call, they're telling us of all the things that could go wrong as we're going to meet our kids and then eventually go back to pick them up and bring them home shortly after. And they said, so there's security concerns. Be very cautious. And there's some levels of unrest in certain parts of the country. And in Kinshasa, it's mostly safe, but you have to be careful. There was travel concerns that oftentimes travel is disrupted with delays, cancellations, all stuff like that. There are financial concerns. It's very expensive to get over there, especially last minute, like we're going to have to do twice and coming back. There were health concerns, a lot of issues in Africa with health concerns, and chances are you might get sick on this trip, and here's what to do. And they were going through all these things, and I won't get going the whole list, but as they're going through the list and worst-case scenarios of what might happen, I get it. What they were doing is covering the liability and trying to prepare us for what could go wrong. But in my mind, I'm thinking, why would anybody in their right mind do this? Why would anybody go through all this trouble of financial and long travel and travel disruptions and safety and security concerns and health concerns? And then she said something in the conference call that helped me understand it all perfectly. But in the end, you will have your kids and you'll bring them home. I was like, oh, that's why I'm doing this. So we got our rounds of shots and our medication to prevent malaria and protect us that way. And we decided to head over and to see our kids. And we came back and then we headed back and we met our kids and we were with them there. And we were thought we were going to be there a week, but we were there for a month, eventually waiting to come home and bring our kids home. And then finally, we got our kids, Jean and Gracia, 7 years ago. We got on an airplane. The first time my kids were on an airplane was a 10.5-hour flight from the Congo to Belgium, and a 6-hour layover, and then another 10-hour flight from Belgium to Chicago O'Hare, and then a 3-hour flight from Chicago to Dallas, and then layovers between, and then finally that 1-hour flight to Lubbock. We get home after 37 hours of travel. We finally get home after flying on this plane for all this time, and we finally show up in the Lubbock airport, and we're there, and we have some friends that are there to meet us, and finally, we're home. Because in the end, after all that trouble, after all the finances, after all the risk, after all the some of it, sometimes danger, the physical wear and tear of being over there and kind of being some limited circumstances, being kind of separated and isolated communication-wise from people we know here at home. Like, we do all this because in the end, we had our kids and we brought them home. This is why Jesus did what he did. He left heaven to come to earth, born in a manger, living a very challenging life, putting himself not just in your shoes, but in your skin to understand what it looks like to hurt and feel, to face rejection, to face pain. He does all of that. He dies on a cross. The innocent for the not innocent, the not guilty for the guilty. And he gives his life in a very painful way. He does all of it because in the end, he'll have his kids and he'll bring them home. Because when something goes missing, however valuable it is to you, it impacts the intensity of the search. And so Jesus says, I have come to seek and save the lost. Here's how Paul said it in Galatians 4. He says, this is what Jesus did. But when the right time came, God sent his son, born of a woman, subject to the law. God sent him to buy freedom for us who were slaves to the law so that he could adopt us as his very own children. In the end, he wanted to have his kids and bring them home. And when you let Jesus find you and save you, salvation too comes to your house. It changes your life from the inside out. And you are now a child of God. You belong to him. In the end, he wants to have his kids and bring them home. Jesus said in Luke 19, today salvation has come to this house because this man too is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek and save the lost. See, you were created on purpose. You're on his radar. He's your creator. And you're on his radar because you're something that matters to him, that's valuable, that's gone lost. And he will literally turn over heaven and earth to find you. There's nothing he wouldn't do to reach you. But he won't make that decision for you. Have you ever played hide-and-go-seek, especially with young kids? Like sometimes after, they don't like being hiding for too long. They want to be found. Like the older you get, the more like, I want to be here for days and no one find me. But for kids, like you want to hide, but you want to be found. So you're hiding, all of a sudden, boop, you make a little noise. You kind of rustle around. You're hiding, but you want to be found. Like there's something about being a kid where you want to be found. I hope there's something in that about that's true of you in your life, that if there's a God that's searching for you, and I believe there is, that you want to be found. And the thing is, God's not hiding. We're the ones that are hiding. And he knows where we are. He doesn't need us to make a noise or do something, but he needs us to take a step toward him. Because a small step toward seeking Jesus makes a big difference. He won't make that decision for us. And then once we live as we're a child of God, He changes us from the inside out. He changes us. So let me ask you, based on Zacchaeus' story, like what is your next step? What do you need to do with this? Well, if you're lost, be found. Jesus came to seek and save the lost. Be found. Live as a child of God. You're now adopted into His family. Say yes to Jesus and then live as if that's true of you. Even if the crowd mutters and says something different about you, about I know what you used to do, or I know what you've done, or I know who you are. Let Jesus speak to your identity. Let Him be the one that finds you and makes you His own. Let Him bring change to you and change you from the inside out. Because that's where change happens, from the inside out. And if He's changed you on the inside and you're a child of God, you will start to live differently and life will look differently. And then I think the great thing that happens is when Jesus finds us and brings us into His family, is He makes us part of His mission. He says, I want you now to go and help me seek and save the lost. And there's something about where you're positioned or something about your story that God could use to help Him in His effort to seek people that greatly matter to Him. People matter to God. You've never locked eyes with someone who does not deeply matter to God. So join Him in His effort to seek and save the lost. Pray for people. Invite people. Share your story with people. Share with them the truth that God loves them and He's for them. That they were created on purpose. They matter. They're on His radar. That He has plans for them in their life. And that He wants to work in their life each and every day to build a big faith. Jesus' purposes include seeking and saving the lost. Our purpose is to be found, to let Him save us, let us change us, and release us into that mission. And in a time like this where there's a lot of chaos going on in the world, I think it's assuring to know that, again, you are on God's radar. He knows you. He knows what's going on. He is with you as you walk through the valley of the shadow. But He also, when you're a child of God, you're not an only child. He wants you to be mindful of those around you. And during this time of uncertainty, it's kind of a time where you don't have a map. No one's had to navigate this really before. But we always have a compass. Because if we're a follower of Jesus, we let Him lead us. And we rely on our big faith in a big God. And we let Him lead us. We believe His promises. We pray for each other. We serve each other. And I think the most important thing you could do during this season is seek God with all your heart. And if you have a little downtime, spend a little more time investigating Him, praying, journaling, seeking Him out. But seek God and serve others. Because again, we're a child of God, but we're not an only child, and we need to look out for each other. Check on each other. Social distancing does not mean social disconnecting. And the irony is that these devices of technology that have kind of made us more disconnected than ever in life, even though we're wired and connected through social media, that actually could be a tool that God uses for you to have some meaningful connection with people during this time, to check on people, to let them know you're praying for them, to ask, is there anything I can do or is there any way I can pray? Social distancing does not mean social disconnecting. And as isolated as you may feel, you are always on God's radar. You matter to Him. He came to seek and save the lost because He wanted, in the end, to find His kids and bring them home. Let's pray together. God, thanks that You love us. Thanks for seeking me out. Thanks for Your willingness to do whatever it took to seek and save the lost, this one who was lost. To do whatever it took to bring Your kids home. God, give us courage to take steps to seek You. And thank You that a small step toward You, a small step toward seeking You, makes a big difference. And God, thanks that Your presence in our lives changes us from the inside out. Please change me to be more like You. And God, I do seek Your wisdom. I do seek Your provision. I do seek Your protection for all those tuning into this that are on Live Oak's radar, that are on my radar. I want that for all of them. But help us to seek you with all our heart more than we seek your guidance. But thanks that when we seek you, you promise to guide us, to provide for us, to protect us, to look out for us, to give us wisdom, to do all these things. And God, in this situation that feels a little bit out of control in the world, thanks that nothing has changed. You are in charge. That we are on your radar. And that you can use even this for the good of those who love you, who've been called according to your purpose. We trust that you're doing that. Make it clear what our steps are through this process as we navigate times of uncertainty. Thanks for seeking me out, Jesus. Amen.